Alex Ovechkin is on the board, and I know, Sean, that you were worried after three games, no goals on 13 shots, that Alex Ovechkin would never score a goal again in the National Hockey League, right? That was a big concern for you, but don't worry. He got two goals in a win against the Vancouver Canucks. More will come. Are you okay?
You know what? He's actually really close. I think he's five away from scoring the most goals ever with one team. Another record held by Gordie Howe. His destruction of the NHL goal-scoring record book continues.
He'll get these. Look, I think he's going to get Gretzky's record. He's going to get to Gordie Howe pretty soon. He's 19 away from him right now. So, but anyway, the season's, it's a week old. We're recording this on Tuesday, a little more than a week, actually. Go back to the Global Series, where our guest, Nick Kotsanika, our colleague, our columnist from NHL.com, he was in Prague. But Nick, you're back now. The NHL season is in full swing. It's full of overreactions. I mean, I know Sean, like I said, was very concerned that Ovechkin, I'm kidding, but very concerned that Ovechkin wouldn't score again. What's your biggest overreaction? And welcome, by the way, to the podcast.
Good to see you guys. Well, if you talk overreaction, I always love Toronto. That's where I go first. They lost to Montreal. They lost to Arizona. Then they get booed off the ice down 2-0. And then Sheldon Keefe comes out afterward and says the difference between us and Arizona is we have elite players and they haven't gotten in their rhythm yet. We all know that nothing matters until the playoffs for the Maple Leafs, right? And yet four games in, people are freaking out. So which is it, right? Is it all about the playoffs, or are we going to freak out about the regular season? And the answer is, in Toronto, both.
You know what? And you're right. It's funny because we're talking four games in with the Leafs, and yes, the reaction is always, well, it doesn't matter until April for them, right? Look, they got to get to April. Okay.
They're going to get to April. Damn.
I get it. And I think that they will too, but their goaltending is what it is right now. It's not that good. Yeah. We know that.
Right.
They are prone to giving up goals. Okay. They still have to outscore their problems. Mm-hmm. They haven't rectified any of these things. We all believe they're a playoff team. And yeah, I think it would be shocking if they weren't. But I'll tell you what, the rest of the division is better. And it's like we just jumped to April for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, they got to play 82 games and get there. They're just like every other team. And I don't know why we do that. I don't know why. What have they done to earn the right for us to say, you know what? I mean, it only matters in the playoffs for them now.
They had, what, 115 points last year?
I get it. I know.
That's what they've done.
That's what they've done. I get it.
What they haven't done is in April. So, look, they've got a goaltending question, obviously, to answer. They've got to play the way they need to play to get in the playoffs. We can argue about their personnel, but like, are we really freaking out, like overreacting four games into the regular season? These guys are human too. They know what matters. So do you think they're up for a game against Arizona in October? No, they're not. Should they be? Yeah. You know, arguably, should they have played better? Yeah. But that's the reality. So I'm not about to go crazy on the Maple Leafs right now.
I am. I think, first of all, how can you not be up for a game at home, right? No disrespect to Arizona, but 75% effort wins the whole thing. You can't come with 75%. You know, when you've already started the season poorly, you got a goaltending mess. One of the guys that you brought in to hopefully solve it hurts himself right away, out for 4 to 6 weeks. An abductor injury, who knows with a goalie what that's going to be like. I'm nervous. If I'm Toronto, I'm nervous. And it's going to build, right? The building was ugly last night. Like, yep. you talk about the players being human. Yeah, they're human. And now they're being turned on. It's going to bother the players, especially if it continues. You know, I thought Sheldon Keefe was right last night in blasting his star players. And it's only four games in. But they're the ones that are going to have to fix this. And they need somebody like a Patrice Bergeron to step up and say, this is unacceptable. It can't be the coach. It can't be the GM. There needs to be a player who throws something in the locker room, stomps his feet and says, you know what, boys? No good. This is an embarrassment. We can't do this. And that's never happened.
They got to play better, but that's the overreaction. Like, it's four games in. They're a 115-point team last year. Just play better. Like, get in the rhythm, but relax.
Yeah. No, look, I think we can all agree that they should be better. But, you know, I tend to agree with what Sean is saying here. These things tend to linger. And if it continues, it's like the world is burning in Toronto. So we have to be aware of that. How about some more overreactions? So I'll give one that the Minnesota Wild, man, I didn't pick the Minnesota Wild to make the playoffs. Minnesota Wild are going to allow more than 6 goals per game this season, right? They can't keep the puck out of the net. They only have a guy who's like a Hall of Fame goalie, right? In Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't think the Wild are near as good as they were. I think other teams have caught up to them. Colorado obviously is better. St. Louis, Nashville, even though, you know, coming home from, you know, the trip, they haven't won, you know, since we record that. Dallas looks terrific, as expected, by the way, because I think Peter DeBoer gets a lot out of his teams early in his tenure. The Wild, they're not going to give up 6 or 7 goals a night like they are now. But I do look at the Minnesota Wild and I wonder about not necessarily their goaltending, but just the way they defend. I mean, even like as good as Kirill Kaprizov is, he's scoring goals and he was still a -3, you know, in a game. So like there should be legitimate concern there. The overreaction, of course, is they're just going to keep, you know, giving up 6 goals a night, you know, with Marc-Andre Fleury in net, which is not going to happen.
Yeah. And look, that's a team that, you know, when you're looking at identity, right? Like that's a flaw, right? That you need to get fixed, right? Like it's a little bit different with Minnesota because like they're not a team with all this, you know, Kaprizov accepted, with all this elite talent that you think can turn it on, right? Like they need to win with an identity. They need to win with defense and goaltending and that kind of identity. And if they don't have it early, that's, you know, that's a concern. Still only 3 games. I don't think this will continue, but yeah, like that needs to get fixed. And you certainly, you know, all this being said, you don't want a team like that in a competitive division like the Central. You don't want to dig yourself a hole too deep too early, because that could be a problem.
And they were all home games. And that makes it worse. They thought they were going to make hay early, you know, with a favorable schedule, and they haven't. But I think they're going to fix it. You know, you talk about track records and identities with Toronto. Like, what's Minnesota's track record? It's this, right? That they're good defensively. They'll outscore you. They'll be hard to play against. I think Dean Evason will fix it. But I wanted to congratulate Dan early. I wanted to be the first one to congratulate him on his good fortune of covering the greatest offensive season in the NHL. And I don't even know how many years since Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky. I mean, Artemi Panarin is going to score 200 points, and the Rangers are going to go, what, they have one loss, so they're going to go
81-1-0. That's pretty good for them, I think. Yeah,
you're going to have a hell of a time, buddy.
Well, the Flyers, though, are going to go 82-0. They're 2-0, buddy.
Right.
Oh, and so the Rangers would play them 3 times, so they would have to go 78-4. So, yeah. But yeah, what a time you're going to have in the Garden. What a great team.
Look, I love the overreactions in the first week or month really of the season, because it really, you know, things balance itself out. But I'll tell you what, the Rangers power play looks really good. It's going to hum along. It's going to be a good power play because they have really good players on it. Panarin already has 5 points on the power play this season. Mika Zibanejad scoring goals on it. Vincent Trocheck looks like he's a perfect fit on it. Adam Fox obviously is terrific. And Chris Kreider is the one, he scored 52 goals. It's like he never missed on the power play last year. He's actually not getting those same type of goals this season, but the Rangers power play looks terrific. The thing with them, they needed 6 goals to beat the Anaheim Ducks, you know, like, well, 5, right? Because they gave up 4 on 22 shots. And that's not necessarily Igor Shesterkin. That's if you watch the game, watch the Rangers play, they are slowly growing into similar habits that they had early last season, where they were heavily reliant on their power play and heavily reliant on Igor Shesterkin to be the man, to be absolutely terrific. Their defensive zone, not that good. They're turning the puck over. It burned them against Winnipeg when it was Yaroslav Halak in net. It almost burned them against Minnesota. They had to score 7 in that game, right? They look like they got to get some of this stuff under control early, because you look around them, right? I mean, look at the team that we all think that they're going to be battling for first place with in the Metro all season, the Carolina Hurricanes. They're not making defensive zone mistakes, right? They're not relying on Freddie Anderson to be all world. They're generating offense off of their defense. They're doing what the Carolina Hurricanes have been doing for years. And the Rangers, if you continue to rely on your elite power play to bail you out, it can be a nice thing, the confidence to have it, but also it can be a dangerous thing for them. And maybe it's a little bit of an overreaction for a team that's 3-1, but you know what? Having watched their game, covered their game against the Anaheim Ducks on Monday night, I think there is a little bit of concern for how they are playing in the defensive zone. It's a lot of what I saw from them in the first half of last season.
Well, they don't even have Patrick Kane yet.
Well, they're getting him. So
wait till they get Patrick Kane with Panarin and on that power play. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, you watch them more closely than I do, right? But like, they still have Shesterkin, right? Like, they need to play better defensively, but they still have maybe the best goalie in the world, arguably. You know, they're going to be interesting to watch, right? Like, you mentioned Carolina. Like, I don't know that there's any overreaction there, but that's a real 3-0 start, right? And I love for them that they're out west doing it, right? Like, they're getting one of those big trips out of the way early, playing well. Like, that's going to be a team to reckon with later in the year because of the way they play, just like you described. And you got Brent Burns in the mix now, too. So, but yeah, I had to throw in the Kane mention there, because we'll when you want real overreaction, wait till that happens.
Speaking of Brent Burns, what a great night to go back to San Jose. Like, congratulations on the Sharks. They did it right. He did it right. Like, it was a good performance. He's fit in seamlessly there. Like, he almost looks a little rejuvenated, I would say. You know, and I would have to think that you are, as a player, right? You walk into a locker room that's put together, that's cohesive. You know, you're accepted into that room. You see the potential there. Like, he had that in San Jose, and then it disappeared, right? And they're trying to find their way. They're in a lot of trouble. I mean, you saw them in Europe, Nick, and, you know, they lost 2 games there, and they were competitive, you know, I guess. And then they came home, and they're going to have that little bit of a hangover. But they're 0-4, and they're coming out east, and they're going to play the juggernaut Rangers. They're going to play an Islanders team that scores 7 goals a game, and they're going to play the Devils. So they could be 0-6 before they play a team that they can beat, theoretically, and 0-6 is really ugly. And that's kind of what Brett Burns was living through until, you know, he was moved to Carolina, and now it's a little bit of a fountain of youth, it seems like.
Yeah. Well, one thing with Burns that I'm interested to see, right? You look at his, when he was at his best in San Jose, what makes him great is that he's a free spirit on and off the ice, right? He's a wonderful personality. You know, he's a bit of a free spirit on the ice, you know, offensively, takes some chances. It's what makes him great. But he did really well in San Jose when he was surrounded by like a strong group that let him be himself, but he was also within that structure, right, in San Jose. And now he's going to a team that has a strong culture, a strong structure, and I'll be interested to see what that brings out in him, right? Like, is he able to, you know, use his skills and creativity, but yet fit within that structure and be rejuvenated, right? Win, you know, like, winning's fun. We're all human, right? So if you're winning and you feel good about things, like, you're going to play better. So I think it's going to be a real interesting season for Brent Burns.
Yeah, and it's on a team now, which is unique in the NHL. It's really a team built around the coach, right? I mean, like, their coach, the Carolina Hurricanes, Rod Brendamore, he sets the tone for everything, and he is still the most popular figure in the franchise. It's very rare that the coach is the most popular figure on the team within the community, within the fan base. I was there on opening night in Raleigh, and Rod Brendamore got the loudest ovation of them all. He did. And because he is the most popular player in Carolina Hurricanes history. And now he's the most popular coach in Carolina Hurricanes history. And he hasn't won the Stanley Cup, but he's been one of the best coaches in the league. Right. So It's unique in that sense. And I think guys that go to that organization, a guy like Brent Burns, understand that they go in knowing that Rod Brendamore is a revered within the Carolina Hurricanes community, but he's revered within the National Hockey League community for who he is, what he did, the type of player he was. And it allows that understanding helps guys fit in, because they, as much of a free spirit as Brent Burns is, and he is, and that's the best part of his personality and whatnot, he understands he has to fit into this, that he's just one part of it. And I think it works perfectly. He's off to a good start. They're off to a great start. They're a team to be reckoned with. They're going to be a team to be reckoned with all year. They're a different team than the Toronto Maple Leafs. And the fact is, I can honestly say it only matters what happens once they get to the playoffs, because to me, they're an absolute lock to be in the playoffs with zero holes on that team. Whereas Toronto, I can't say is an absolute lock, even though they should be.
Well, I don't know about zero holes. Like, they don't have the highest end, elite offensive talent, though they have good talent, right? Like, so every team has a weakness. But the thing about Brendan Moore, a couple things. Number one, when you win a cup, and you're a star player in a cup winning team, he's got all of that capital built up with the fan base. He's also proven to be an outstanding coach in his own right. And then you've got a team that doesn't have a lot of superstars. Like, they have some really good players, some underappreciated players. But that's a team that wins with, teamwork and identity and the things that the coach preaches. It reminds me a little bit of Detroit, where, Yzerman, has all the goodwill from the fans from having been a star player and a cup winner, but also has cred from being a GM, right, in Tampa. It's a little bit different situation, but similar to me in the sense that, like, if you look at the Detroit Red Wings, who's the most popular figure in the organization? It's the GM, like, by far. So that's what it reminds me a little bit of in Carolina. But, like, you look at that roster, how are they going to win, right? They're not going to win with one or two guys carrying that team. They're going to win with, identity and teamwork, defense, goaltending.
You mean Elmer's not the most revered figure in the Detroit universe?
Soon. Did you see him last night? So this guy's 6'8", the tallest player in Red Wings history. The last forward I can remember being 6'8" was John Scott. There ain't a whole lot of them in NHL history. And this guy doesn't lumber around the ice. Like, he's pretty smooth. And last night he made a play. He's coming up the middle, going against a smaller defender. I think pretty much everybody's smaller. And he, with just great hand-eye coordination, kind of bats the puck over the guy's head and skates in on goal. He didn't score. But a play like that's pretty impressive, to have that sort of ability to move like a small man at 6'8". I'm really interested to watch him play a little bit in the NHL and see, how, say, 10 games goes. And he's on that line. So he's on a line with Michael Rasmussen, who's 6'6". The smallest guy, the little guy in line, is Oscar Sundqvist, who's 6'3". So we're all trying to come up with names for the line. And I believe Mickey Redmond, I have to give him credit for this one, calls them the treesome. Someone else said the skyline. So there's some pretty good names being thrown around. But I'm interested to see if this line sort of sticks together and can have some staying power. But Soderblom, there's some potential there to be a fan favorite for sure.
I like the Redwoods.
Oh, I like that one. Yeah, that's good.
He's a people mover.
But you know what?
That was bad.
I like it. That's a very good insider Detroit reference there. But, like, I think they would love it to be some people mover. Like, they need somebody to go with a net, move some people around. Right. And he did. He came in on Doughty last night. There was one play below the goal line, and just kind of threw Doughty around. Right. And like, they need a guy like that. And he's a net front on the power play, a 6'8" guy setting a screen is pretty good. And from what I can tell, he's got some hands. So he's a guy that I'm very interested to watch.
The Bruins used to do that with Chara. They'd put Chara in front of them on the power play. And you know what? He's going to have to be good because things were so exciting in Detroit. Oh, they had made so many moves. They were going to be better. Their goaltending was better. You know, Husso looked great in his debut. Like, everything was better. And then Tyler Bertuzzi's out.
The good thing is for them is, you know, they added some depth. You know, Bertuzzi's out now. Verano had a personal reason. He was out last game. Robbie Fabry is out till, you know, mid-season. But those are three pretty good players, right? And if they're able to sort of, you know, keep building an identity and stay in it, and they can get those guys back, they could be interesting as the season goes on. Like, my attitude with the Red Wings has been, like, they are definitely going to be far better than they were last season, right? But the question for me is, are they still better than Toronto, Tampa, Florida, right? Those, like, I don't think so. And then you got wild card teams. Can they leap a wild card team, right? But like, to me, if they're just playing meaningful hockey late in the season, that's a great step forward. And I really, you know, the first two games, I don't want to read too much into, right? They beat Montreal, they beat New Jersey. They beat two teams that should be at, or, you know, around the bottom of the league, bottom third of the league. What was interesting to me was LA, right? LA comes in, playoff team, third game in four nights for the Red Wings. They're down. Just the guys we talked about, Fabry, Verana, and Bertuzzi, right? And they kept, you know, kept with LA, right? And then now it's third period. They get the goalie pulled. They're down by one. Victor Arvidsson is in on goal. You know, all he's got to do is throw it in an empty net. And Dylan Larkin back checks his rear off, pokes the puck away from Arvidsson, and they tie the game and steal a point, right? That's a, for a team like Detroit, that's a big deal, right? Because that shows, you know, heart. We're not going to give up. We're going to set a standard here. When you're trying to build a foundation, not just for this season, but for the future, like, that's a little play that could go a long way for them. So if they're in the race later in the season, look back on that point and remember it.
Yeah. And I remember before this season began, I was asked a question in the mail, in my mailbag of, you know, the teams, Detroit, Buffalo, Ottawa, right? Those three teams that were at the bottom, along with Montreal, of that division, of the Atlantic division, who's got the best chance? And to me, I said Detroit of the three to really make that jump and potentially be a playoff team this season to knock one of these other teams out. And I said that because they added veteran presence. They added guys like David Perron, Andrew Kopp, Olli Maatta, right? I mean, guys who have won, guys who have been around, they've played in big games. That's going to help guys like Dylan Larkin, like a Tyler Bertuzzi when he's healthy, right? So the core that's been there. Then when you now factor in, yeah, nobody wants to lose a Tyler Bertuzzi for 6 to 8 weeks, I think it is, you know, or and Robbie Fabry, you want him in the lineup too. Those are skilled guys. They're important players. But like you said, Nick, if they can stay in it, now you're giving opportunity to guys who otherwise wouldn't get it, and it's empowering those players. And you're finding, you might find something in a couple of guys that becomes really valuable for you come January, come February, come March, when these guys, you know, when a Bertuzzi's back in the lineup, and there's going to be other injuries. We know that as the season goes on, you need to, if you're a team like Detroit, you need to, where you're building your core, right? You need to empower other guys that aren't necessarily guaranteed locks to be part of your core to play their way into that. And I kind of think of the Tampa Bay Lightning and how that's kind of what they were. We knew it was Stamkos. We knew it was Hedman, right? But, and we knew it was Kucherov, but here comes Braden Point, right? Here comes Alex Killorn, right? Here comes Anthony Cirelli here, right? I mean, guys who, Eric Chernak is another one, guys who were given an opportunity to play their way into that core. And they became a huge part of why the Lightning are what they are right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Ottawa is right there with Detroit, though. I think they're very, very similar, right? You add a Giroux, you add a DeBrincat, right? Like, I think Ottawa, and the more of those teams, the more difficult it is. You get a leapfrog, you know, Toronto, Tampa, Florida, then you got a leapfrog wildcard teams, then you got a leapfrog Ottawa, right? And Buffalo. thing about Detroit too, right? It buys time for some of these younger players, right? You got a Simon Edvinson, highly touted, you know, another towering player, defenseman. He can go to Grand Rapids, right? Like they added Olimata and Ben Sherratt, right? And some depth on defense, so they don't have to rush him, right? He can go to Grand Rapids to develop the way Moritz Seider did. We need to come up later this year or come up next year, right? So all good things. Long-term for Detroit, the thing that still concerns me, like I don't see them having an elite number one center. And I don't know where they're going to find that, right? They have to find that somewhere. And that's my concern. Like if you're like, they're going to win the cup someday. Do they have that player? Yeah, I love Dylan Larkin. I think Kopp was a great signing. But that's one thing I wonder about.
Well, you have the pieces to do it. You have the pieces to make it happen from another team, especially in salary cap hell. But I think you guys are underselling Buffalo. Like, I think the changes they made, you know, you watch that afternoon game they played against Florida, and they ended up losing. But the tooth and nail with the Panthers all day. And the thing that struck me the most is Dahlin, right? Like, he's a really good player, but through a lot of what happened, he was really passive. He just kind of accepted what happened. You know, we talked to him at PMT, me and Dan, a great interview. And he talked about the confidence that Granato gave him and the fact that he told them that bad things are going to happen and let them happen and just go and do what you do. And he talked about being really empowered. But what struck me in that game is he was all over to Chuck the whole game. Like, in his face, the end of the game, they had to be broken up. Like, he was engaged. The Sabres were engaged, and they hadn't been until that second half of last year when, you know, teams came in and they were like, who the hell is this Buffalo team? Go ask the Toronto Maple Leafs. Go ask Vegas. You know, Jack Eichel comes in and it's going to be this grand coronation, and they just ran him out of the building. You know, it's a small sample size when they're eliminated, but their attitude is different.
You might be right, right? And I think Dan and I agree on this. Just in the short term, because of the veterans that Detroit and Ottawa added, why we say that. But Buffalo's right there. And you didn't even mention Owen Power, right? Like, they got that guy. And you look at Calder candidates, like, I think Matty Beniers probably has an advantage over him just because he's going to put up points. And points are easy for voters to circle. But you got Owen Power there too. You know, and if Dahlin can hit his stride and you got Owen Power, like, that's pretty impressive, you know, on the back end. But yeah, I think there's a lot to like, you know, for Buffalo in the longer term, to longer term.
Yeah. I look at them as a team that is, look, they need to show in the first half of this season that their second half of last season was not a fluke. Right. And so far, okay, you know, they've done a pretty good job of that. We'll see. But eventually, to show the second half of last season was not a fluke, you got to start winning that game against the Florida Panthers, right? I mean, they play it, they're in it, but they lose 4-3, right? So you got that. That's the step that they have to take to start winning some of those games. But what I like about Buffalo, and it really started in the second half of last season when there was no pressure. They were out of it, right? It's different to play when there's no pressure on you and everybody knows, but they started to build an identity that, as like you were saying, Sean, you know, a team that's going to be in your face, a team that's going to understand that mistakes happen and live through them, learn from them, and still grind away at you. And they also started to build a core, right? To some of the players in this team now, are you see hope in Buffalo, whereas for years you saw a team, a franchise, just kind of in the wind. Like, what were they? You know, okay, they had Jack Eichel, but what else? You know, like, they got Rasmus Dahlin, but what else? You know, like, and he was passive. Now you're starting to see an identity form for this team, a core form for this team that in the long run is going to play big dividends, but and pay big dividends. But I think in the shorter term this season, especially with what we're looking at in goal for the Buffalo Sabres, compared to what you're looking at in goal for the Red Wings and the Ottawa Senators, I just don't see how they can make that big leap to be a top four team in the Atlantic Division. They may finish seventh and have a good season.
You're being too reasonable. You're sounding like me for, you know, an overreaction show. Like, when are we going to get to the Canucks being 0-3?
Hold on.
And the Devils being 0-2 and trying to run the coaches out of town?
We'll get there in a second, but you also in the Atlantic Division.
This is Nick, voice of reason stuff.
You've brought up Toronto, Florida, and Tampa Bay. You forgot to mention the Boston Bruins, who are going to go 82-0, right? And Jim Montgomery is going to be the coach of the year. He's going to come back, and they're going to go 82-0. And then David Pastrnak's going to sign an 8-year deal worth $800 million, and it's going to be unbelievable for them.
But just keeping up with Cassidy. He's 3-0 too in Vegas. So there you go, you know.
But no, there's a couple of things. So it's not all positives and things along those lines, right? So you did bring up the Canucks and the Devils, and I wanted to, we got to get on both of them. I guess we'll start with the Devils. Sean, they're chanting Fire Lindy in the home opener, right? Like they booed him. They booed him when he was introduced, and they've lost a couple of games. As we're recording this Tuesday, they play the Anaheim Ducks, who have allowed a lot of goals, 17 goals in three games. They play them Tuesday night, and Anaheim's on a back-to-back. That's a game the Devils have to win. We don't know what's going to happen, obviously, as we record this. But, I mean, things got to change quick there, or you know what? I mean, I don't think I'm talking out of turn here, but things got to change quick there, or the fans that were chanting the other night are probably going to get their wish.
Yeah, well, but I didn't know that Lindy Ruff played goal for the New Jersey Devils. Like, I didn't know that was part of his job duties. Look, they play the Philadelphia Flyers. They're supposed to beat the Philadelphia Flyers, right? If they're better than they are, Philadelphia was supposed to go 0-82. Carter Hart's no good. And he wasn't good against the Devils. He gave up a couple bad goals. But then they get the lead, and then here's Mackenzie Blackwood, shot right on his chest, coughs it up right into the slot. Now there's no D there, but there's an offensive guy there to put it right in. I mean, it's a save that literally a rec league goalie can make, a beer league goalie can make, maybe me in my prime could make. Not now, I'd probably fall over and hurt myself. But it was a save that they needed to have, and they didn't have it, and they unraveled from there. The New Jersey Devils will never be good until their goaltending's good. They have other pieces. Their defense, it's all right. Dougie Hamilton, Graves, they're okay. Their offense, it'll work. But if you don't believe in your goaltender, you're dead in the water. And I thought the most telling thing was Miles Wood came out and basically called game two a must-win game. I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of being on a losing team. I'm tired of the season being over. We need to go out and win. And then what happened the next day? He walked it all back, right? Why are you walking it back? Why aren't there five guys behind him saying, you know what? I got Miles Woods back. Screw this. This sucks. I want better, right? Supposedly, part of the reason that John Tortorella is in Philadelphia is because Cam Atkinson said Philly was too much of a country club. Like, let's bring in somebody to shake this place up. And who's better than John Tortorella to do that? When somebody on my team says, this doesn't work, it goes back to what I was saying about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, you police your own room. Like, coaches are important. We put up the X's and O's. You do this, you do that. But if you don't have buy-in in the room, if there aren't at least 15 guys in that room saying, we're in this together, this is ours, we own it, you're dead. You got nothing. And for Miles Wood to have to walk back for whatever reason, whether it was pressure from inside the room, whether he was surprised that nobody got on his back and said, you're 100% right, Miles, let's go. Like, whatever reason he felt like I went too far and I need to apologize. That kid doesn't need to apologize for anything.
Agreed.
Yeah. It's too calm around the New Jersey Devils all the time. And it's been like that for years. It's just been too calm, too easygoing, too, well, you know, I mean, we did some good things. We did, you know, oh, we got good players. Oh, yeah, it's the goaltending. It's the goaltending problem. Yeah, the goaltending is a problem. And I believe that 100%. And it does make bad teams better. But there's no leadership. There's no, like, push. And that to me comes down to coaching. Like, that to me, you get a coach in there that can change the culture of that. Jack Hughes is not going to change the culture. Jack Hughes doesn't know any better in the National Hockey League. All he knows is this. He doesn't know any better. He can talk to other people and say, oh, you guys have it better. He doesn't know any better. He can't even talk to his brother, Quinn, and say he knows it better. He doesn't. You know, it has to come from the experience of someone who has a voice. And Lindy's a longtime coach in this league, and he's had a lot of success as he's won a lot of games as a coach in this league. But this has been going on for too long in New Jersey, and something has to change. And a lot of times we say the easiest thing to do is to change the coach, even though it's not only coach and all that stuff. And I get that. Steve Yzerman's not walking through the door to be the captain of the New Jersey Devils. Joe Sakic's not walking through the door to be the captain of the New Jersey Devils, right? They don't have that guy. They don't have any of those guys. They need somebody else to be the guy. And it's got to be the coach that delivers the message and changes things. And I just, you know, I mean, until maybe Lindy can do it, I don't know, but I don't believe it from what I have seen so far. And I think, you know, all things considered, and I never want to think about this, but it's not, like I said, not talking out of turn. I mean, if we were going to take bets on who would be the first coach fired this season, it would probably be Lindy Ruff.
You know who else has won a lot of games in this league? Paul Maurice. What did Paul Maurice do last year? Walked away.
Yeah.
I can't get to this team. I can't get to this team. I've won everything there is to win in this league. I cannot get to this team. This has nothing to do with Lindy Ruff. This has absolutely nothing to do with Lindy Ruff. It has to do with the players in that room. And you could say, oh, they don't know any better. Of course they know better. They're all winners. They've all won in their lives. They haven't won in the NHL, but they know what it means to win. They know what it means to put a comprehensive effort out. They know all those things. Lindy Ruff doesn't have to tell them.
You think Hischier and Hughes, like, there's a difference being a professional. It's both. Like, I think, you know, it's coaching. You need mentors, you need older players. Like, it's a process, and it's been a process for great players. Like you mentioned Steve Yzerman. Steve Yzerman didn't win until it wasn't the captain, capital T, capital C, until later in his career, right? Like, he needed Scotty Bowman, right? Like, yes, you need coaching, you need mentors, you need to learn. It's a mix, and you know, a goalie would help.
Well, yeah, and that is the underlying thing here with the New Jersey Devils is the goaltending has been bad for too long, and if they just got B goaltending, right? I mean, if they just got B goaltending, then maybe things would be a little bit better. But I do think that there needs to be they're not having leaders walk into the room as players, so something's got to change there. It's been going on for far too long. We'll see what happens. But anyway, there's also the Vancouver Canucks, who also have a Hughes and who I mentioned before. They have played three games and they have blown two goal leads in each one of the games. And as we speak right now, Tuesday, they have been outscored, I believe it's 7-0 in the third period. The overreaction would be that the Canucks are cooked already, that they don't know how to hold a lead. They have no killer instinct. I don't buy that. I think actually with the goaltender that they have in Thatcher Demko and some of the players that they have, I think that this is a team that, like what Coach Bruce Boudreaux said, you need one good thing to happen to you and it can have a snowball effect. Right now they're looking for the bad to happen. They're waiting for the bad to happen. And if they can just get a win, turn it around one way, I do think that this team is good enough to have it snowball the other direction too.
Well, it's funny when you talk about overreaction. Like, I don't think it's an overreaction to be concerned, not just because they lost, because of the way they've lost.
Yeah.
And the fact they call the players only meeting, it's free. Two things. It's bad that you have to call players only meeting three games in, but I guess it's good that you call the players only meeting. Like Sean was talking about players taking ownership. Well, there you go. You called your players only meeting. Let's see what you do from this point. It's obviously too early to panic, but it's good that they've recognized that this is not the way they can play.
And they've made an improvement because JT Miller wasn't on the ice for all the goals in game three. He was on the ice, I think, for the first nine goals.
For every goal. For the first eight, I think it was. Yeah.
But again, here's a player who says, comes out unprovoked.
Yeah.
And says, I'm not good enough. We're not going to win if I play like this. This is on me. And Bruce tried to do the right thing. You know, you talk about coaching, and to me, coaching is really subtle stuff. He took him off the first line. He put him on the second line and said, here, maybe this is a little less pressure. Go figure it out. Play against a little less competition, whatever it might be. Like, go figure it. Like, to me, that's how a coach can help a player. But it's on the player. Like, it, to me, it's always on the player. Like, my boss doesn't determine whether I'm good or bad. I do. Like, you do. You determine whether you're good or bad. I can tell you anything I want. Like, but you can be like, well, screw you. What do you know? You're an old man. Your time's gone. Maybe you were good once, but your time's gone. Now you sit behind a desk. You don't do what I do. It's up to you to be the best you can. And the coach doesn't really have a whole hell of a lot to do with it if you're not interested in being the best you can. If you don't have that internal thing to say, I'm going to do this, Scotty Bowman can coach you. And there are players that Scotty Bowman never got to. Why? Because they didn't want to be gotten to.
Yes. And it is on the players, and you're empowering the players to do that, but it's also on the coach. I disagree with you here again, Sean. Like, I look at the New York Islanders. Before Barry Trotz came in, they were the worst defensive team in the league. They didn't want to be the worst defensive team in the league, but they were. And Matthew Barzal was kind of all over the place. Terrific offensive player, but an all over the place player. Barry Trotz came in, and the Islanders became the best defensive team in the league. The player personnel didn't change much. The coach did, the attitude did, the culture did, right? And that made a big difference. That was the coach that made that difference. Like, the players bought in immediately to that. And it became on them once the culture was set. In New Jersey, going back to it, the culture is not set. Like, it's not there. There's nobody holding anybody accountable. You brought it up with Miles Wood, right? Miles Wood comes out, says, this is a must-win game. The next day he walks it back and almost apologizes, right, for saying that. And nobody says a word. Nobody comes to, there's not a camaraderie. There's not a unity there that you need on a winning team. I'm sure they're buddies, but there's not a unity you need there. And so that's the thing that you got to watch for with New Jersey. With Vancouver, I definitely think, Nick, like you said, it's maybe sounds too early to panic, but there's certainly a reason for concern. One more thing, though, I wanted to get to with you guys, because I know you guys will have opinions on this. Shane Wright. Now, this is not obviously to do with the Canucks or the Devils, so I'm changing the subject. Shane Wright has played in two games. He is averaging 6 minutes and 32 seconds of ice time. He played 6 minutes and 14 seconds against the Anaheim Ducks. He played 6 minutes and 50 seconds against the Carolina Hurricanes. His one shot, he has no points. He's been a healthy scratch twice. Why is he in the NHL?
This goes back to a point I wanted to make. I think every team's different. Every situation's different, right? Coaching matters. Otherwise, there wouldn't be coaches, right? Ideally, Sean's right. Players are self-starters and don't need to coach. But, you know, every team is at a different point in its development, right? I'm not going to panic about the Maple Leafs being, you know, where they are because they were, you know, they've had a regular season track record, right? Vancouver, you know, when you're probably a bubble team to make the playoffs, yeah, 0-3 is a problem. You look at Seattle. It's second year expansion team. This is an interesting situation where, you know, on the surface, if Shane Wright is not going to play meaningful minutes in the NHL, he should probably go back to junior, you know, and play meaningful minutes, right? Get a lot of ice time, develop, get confidence, unless they feel he's got nothing more to do in junior, and he will benefit more by being around the NHL team to learn how to be a pro. You know, this is a situation where, frankly, I don't have a strong opinion on it because I want to know more. Like, what's going on here? It's a concerning thing early, but it's still early, right? So maybe they haven't made a decision. But those are the questions I'm asking. Like, if he's not going to play meaningful minutes, why is he in the league? Why is he better off in the league than going back? Do you think he'll play meaningful minutes later? I have more questions about this than I have answers or opinions right now, but it's certainly a strange thing to me.
It doesn't bother me in the least. Like, you got 9 games to figure it out. Yeah, and you can do it over 9 games or you can do it over 20 games. It's nine games for him.
Right.
Why not give him the time to sit around professionals, to see what he's missing, to see how he needs to play the game, to test himself occasionally against it. Look, I think the worst thing you can do, and you can go all the way back to Joe Thornton about this, is to force feed somebody minutes. You kill him. You'll absolutely kill him, right? Like, you'll just destroy who they are because they've been great their whole lives. And all of a sudden, they're not ready, and you, hey, get out there. Go play against this guy. Go play against this guy. And you know he's overmatched. But you have this investment. Well, he's our first round pick. He's the next superstar. We've deemed him this. So let's throw him out into the meat grinder. He'll prove us right. Like, and if he doesn't prove us right, it's egg on our face because we said that he was going to be great. So we got to keep doing this. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, let's just keep putting him out there and let him get his teeth kicked in. And if he's a man, he'll take care of it. And if he's not, he won't. Like, there's nothing wrong with being an apprentice. There's nothing wrong with sitting around and learning and doing.
But again, I think every player is different, right? Like, we fall in these traps. Like, I lean toward the, you know, be patient, don't rush him. You know, that's the way I would err. But like, every player and situation is different. Like, and especially when you've got a second year expansion team, is Shane Wright the type of personality and player where throwing him out there lots of minutes, getting his teeth kicked in, is okay for him and is the best thing for him? Or is he the type of guy where it's not? And honestly, I don't know the answer to that. Right.
And what do they gain?
You need to figure that out.
What do they gain? Even if he's good.
Mm-hmm.
What are they gain?
Some players, you throw them in the deep end, they struggle for a while and they learn how to swim. Others think.
But even if he's like rookie of the year by the end of the year, what do they gain? They're still no good.
Well, they gain development for the future is what they gain, right? Like, if that's what's best for his development for 2, 3, 4 years down the road, then okay. But that's how you got to think, right? It's not about this season and what Shane Wright can bring right now. It's about what Shane Wright going to bring over the long term and what's the best for his development. Like, that's, to me, that's all that matters.
Yeah, so don't force feed him.
Yeah, no, I agree.
One thing that also has to be brought up with Shane Wright is he missed an entire season. He didn't play for an entire season. So, Nick, the argument of maybe he's graduated from junior hockey, maybe he's too good for that right now, but he's not quite on the level to be a regular in the NHL – that makes sense for a couple of guys. I've heard that argument before with a number of players who were high draft picks. But Shane Wright missed an entire season of hockey. So I wonder if he only played, I believe, 2 junior seasons in the OHL because of that. So I don't think necessarily we can look at that and say he's too good to play in the OHL now, right? So he's too good for junior hockey. Now, yeah, they have the 9 games, but I guess the thing that bothers me about this is not the fact that he's been a healthy scratch for 2 games and he's played 2 games. It's that the games he's played only 6 minutes. Like, he's not getting anything out of playing 6 minutes of hockey. If you're going to put him in the lineup, play him 12 or 13 minutes. Let him sink or swim in those 12 or 13 minutes. Not every single, if you don't want to do it every single night, that's fine, but give him an opportunity. Give him a chance. And right now they so far have not given him that opportunity because nobody can really be effective in 6 minutes, especially when you come in as an offensive player, a top line guy, you know, your whole life. And now you've come in and you got to play fourth line minutes, 6 minutes a night. It's almost impossible to show what you can have, show what you can be.
You know, what's amazing about all this, the NHL is geared towards Canadians, right? Every advantage is the Canadian kids have all the advantages. They're scouted more, everything that goes on. But perhaps the most unfair rule in all of hockey kills these kids.
Yep, it is true.
Right? He can't go where he belongs. He can't go to the place between the OHL and the NHL. He's not allowed by law, by rule, the agreement that the NHL has with the Canadian Hockey League, he's not allowed to go to the AHL, which is where he belongs. Kid drafted ahead of him for the Devils, Nemich. He's in the AHL. He's going to play 20 minutes a game, and he's going to learn, and he's going to be challenged, and he's not going to overwhelm that league. And it's going to be brilliant for his development.
Yeah.
Shane Wright doesn't have that opportunity. He goes to the OHL or he stays in the NHL. And neither one of those options is fair to the kid. Because there's another place for him to go that he cannot go because it would hurt the CHL, right? They would lose all their kids and they wouldn't have a league like they have now where those 18-year-old drafted kids are going and dominating and selling tickets and all the other things that they do. And it's great for that league and it's great for the kids that are coming up as 17-year-olds to test themselves against players that have already been drafted. But it's not really great for Shane Wright right now because he's got no place to go.
It's a great point, and I think it's also a big reason why more and more kids are going the college route too, you know, because they can go to play in college and they can stay if they want. They can leave if they want. It's a great point, Sean. I mean, I look at a guy, Cole Caulfield, right? Montreal Canadiens. He goes and plays in college, right? And gets that, you know, that opportunity. Now, he's not a Canadian guy. He's from Wisconsin. He played there at the University of Wisconsin. But Cole Caulfield got the opportunity to play meaningful hockey at a level that he felt comfortable, right? And at a level that he belonged in, and he played well. And now Cole Caulfield, I mean, he could be the next 50-goal scorer in the NHL.
And when he was bad, he got sent to Laval.
Exactly.
And he got a game back together. He didn't go back to Wisconsin where he had proven everything he could prove. He went and played against people that he needed to prove to management that he could play against, that he was ready to come back, and that he had a professional coach who kicked him in the butt, like you guys are talking about, and that taught him what he needed to learn to play the professional game. And there's so many kids in the Canadian Hockey League that don't get that opportunity because it's not a path for them.
By the way, is it an overreaction to say that Cole Caulfield will score 50 goals this season?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's a good way to end then.
But they have a defenseman who's going to win Rookie of the Year and maybe the Norris Trophy in Caden Gooley.
Oh, okay. That's right. Yes. Caden Gooley, definitely Norris Trophy this season. Look, how about it? Is it an overreaction for Cole Caulfield to score 40 goals this season?
Yes.
Less of one, but probably.
It still is. You want to know why? How many did Trevor Zegras score?
Off the top of my head, I don't know.
I believe it was 24. Is he a better goal scorer than Cole Caulfield?
No, I think Cole Caulfield's can be an elite goal scorer.
So do I. Is he better than Trevor Zegras?
As a goal scorer, yes.
He might be. He's got Marty St. Louis, too.
Yeah, as a goal scorer. He's got 3-4 as we talk now. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to say 40 goals for Cole Caulfield. I don't think it's an overreaction for what he can be this season. But this was fun. I think we went around the league. We got some overreactions, got some good stuff, some opinions. So, Nick, thank you so much for joining us. Follow Nick and all his work on NHL.com and at Katsunika on Twitter. And we'll be back next week. Until then, enjoy the hockey.